welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
We should be good to go.
Okay, not too much like background noise?
Yeah, but it's ambient noise.
Okay, yeah. It was a Jackie Mason episode level right. of background noise. It's charming.
If you haven't guessed by now, it's the season 7 wrap-up show. I'm sitting in the Washington Square Diner with Alex Vasella.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing really good. How are you?
Good. Congrats on another season to us.
Yes.
I'm going to congratulate us.
You're going to congratulate everyone but yourself. Me. You do most of the work. You're like, congrats to you and you and you. Who am I forgetting? Oh, yeah. I do the whole thing.
But it's
you're great. A charitable man.
It's great that we got this far.
Yeah.
It's amazing. We're in seventh season. The numbers are better than they've ever been.
Yeah, I'm happy about that. Because that's the thing, when you do a show, it's very easy to forget that you're not just typing into the void. That's like, oh, someone's listening to this and not hating it? That's, by podcasting standards on my level, like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because normally you lose money to do a podcast. We, like, at least break even. We get a little sponsorship and stuff. And, so yeah. I'm always grateful for that.
Me too.
Super grateful.
Very, very grateful, very excited going into season 8.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most excited I think I've ever been to go into another season.
Yeah.
We have an audience here. Sir, what do you think so far? How's our...
I'm waiting for y'all to bust a rap, man.
Here, come over here for a second.
Nah,
he doesn't want to get on the microphone.
I'm good, I'm good.
You wanted us to rap, huh?
I know an alarming amount of Hamilton if now you need to use it. I'm going to get a scholarship to King's... Anyway.
All right. So let's start at the beginning of the season. We kicked off pretty strong there.
Doug Stanhope.
Yeah.
That might be my favorite episode just on laughs-wise. Even though the philosophy was a slow-motion train wreck, it was still a really fun train wreck.
Yeah. I think, you know, if we wanted to get the philosophy in, I probably should have started with it. Because the drinking and the philosophy...
Yeah. Well, you have Doug Stanhope. You don't start with the book learning.
It was a fun show.
Yeah. It was... Because I also listened to the version he put out on his feed that was, like, uncut.
Yeah.
And I like that, too. It's even more unwieldy because you made it a little more focused. But they're both so much fun.
Yeah.
And I love... Man, I tried to explain that philosopher so hard. Like, what you got that was... borderline gibberish was me refining it as much as I could, and
so,
it still couldn't.
What was he trying to say?
Okay. So Plotinus's whole thing was the one is not God. It's not even a supernatural thing. It's just the fact that we are all in existence, so we're all made of the same. It's like you were talking about with the tortoise, where you look at him going like, we're both alive in different ways.
Right.
It's everything that's around us is all here, therefore it is all basically from the same, has the same genesis, right?
Right.
So when the one is looking back at the one, it means I'm talking to you, but we both came from the same place. We are in essence the same thing. The one is talking to itself, right?
Like when I congratulated myself at the
yes!
top of the...
So when you congratulate me, you're congratulating you, right?
Right.
So it was, you know, Stanhope was like, what is this fucking mumbo jumbo self-help shit? And he interpreted it as the one is God, but the one isn't God because like that one of those quotes said, if the one was God and had a sentient man with the beard in the sky, it would in essence be part of the one because that's another thing that's in existence, you know?
Right.
It would be two separate. It has to be a oneness.
The oneness is God.
It's well, he's not even saying it's God.
He's just saying there is a oneness.
Yeah.
You're leaving? You're going to miss the whole pot. Okay, you'll be back.
Come back. I love you.
It's our audience.
All right. He's very reassuring.
Yeah.
So the one is really hard to explain, and I did it as best I could, but...
Yeah.
You know.
So how is that any different than God, though?
You could probably make a compelling argument that as long as you're talking about more like a Spinoza God that doesn't, you know, put down his finger and make things change, that it's just the essence of being, you could definitely make a compelling religious argument that he means that in a God way. I don't think he meant it that way, but I mean, then we talked about Roland Barthes' Death of the Author, so you could say that's what he was aiming at, even if he didn't know it.
Huh.
So.
So he was just pretty much giving you a different idea rather than God.
Sort of, yeah.
So basically it sounds like he was making another argument for what God could be.
Yeah, he definitely is making an argument for what existence could be. And when you get down that base to that basic level of metaphysics, you can interpret that in a lot of different ways. And one of them could definitely be a God way. Because if he's saying everything's connected, you can go, well, maybe that's what these other religions are hinting at.
Right.
And he might even say, no, well, I meant it more in a secular way. But you go, well, you know, the logical blueprint you've laid out sounds a lot like what a lot of philosophers say about God and what a lot of religious texts say about God. So
absolutely.
I feel like I'm just making it more complicated right now, but that's how I interpreted it.
It sounds like to me that he didn't have a clear philosophy.
Like he wrote it on the way to reporting it. He's like,
I feel like he first came up with God, and then he's like, nah, God's been done. I need
God's hack.
I need something new and fresh.
I gotta tag God.
Oneness. They're one. Like, that sounds a lot like God. And he's like,
he's like, no. It's he's got an elevator pitch to the one, and he's like, no, it's not God. It's chair, like wood and stuff is part of the one too. And
they're like, yeah, that's God.
They're like, okay. He's like sweating.
They're like, why don't you at least come up with the two? You know, the one.
The sequel's never as good, though. So
just come up with something new. He's like, I thought this was new. It's like, you cheated.
He's like, I'm sorry. Can I do punch up on God?
Then we had,
reboot culture. Just
William of, what was it? William of
Shampoo.
Shampoo William.
Yeah.
William of Shampoo. Of Shampoo. Christian Finnegan.
That was the one who, it was all about fear, I believe. Can't remember the specifics of that one too much, but it was like, are we only good because we're afraid of consequences, or is it moral? And then, of course, that logically ends up in the fear of God / love of God. Are those the same thing? Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was about.
That sounds familiar to me.
Yeah. But I loved him talking about... the thing about he's like, I know that I need to go to a therapist because I'm worried that I'm dominating all conversations I'm in.
Yeah.
So I have to pay a guy to not have that worry, and I still kind of have it because I have that too. So
I remember from that episode, I think that he bashed Robert Klein in the episode.
He did a little bit. He's like, you know, it's okay, but he said it didn't age well.
Right.
I think... I've only listened to one Robert Klein. It was Child of the 50s, which was the big one. I thought a lot of it was hilarious, and some of it didn't quite age as well.
I see where he was coming from. You know, it is a little hard to... his stuff doesn't all hold up so well.
And it was interesting what Christian was saying about... He's like, I don't get a lot of joy of watching the greats. Comedy, especially because that has such a shelf life sometimes. But even, like, he's talking about music. He's like... You listen to Chuck Berry, and it's kind of fun, but it's not like revolutionary anymore because people have built on that so much.
Right.
And I think it's an interesting kind of line to draw or to explore of like, what was revolutionary back then that still blows people's minds now? Like, what do you have to go, well, it was the time. What can you go, oh, it's still insane to listen. Like, I think like listening to Jimi Hendrix was probably insane back then, but it's still pretty like out there now.
Jazz, I feel
jazz,
like.
Jazz, definitely.
Like good jazz, New Orleans jazz.
Yeah. Oh, it's like what you were saying with Gad Elmaleh, however to pronounce that. You're like, stand-up and jazz are two art forms that are, the intent is to break rules.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's actually involved on why that it's relevant to this.
That's interesting.
Because it has to break rules to exist.
Yeah, so the rules haven't been made since then, so there's still it still feels fresh and new,
and musical scales are still like even though, you know, scales and patterns are beautiful in their own way, breaking them still feels a little transgressive where you're like, where is this going? But that's the feeling that you're supposed to get,
right?
Like I you know, I'm slowly getting into jazz because I've listened to so much rock music in my life that I really like all the blues patterns and stuff. So it's hard for me to just go completely the other way, but I know I need to do that because it's a whole genre that has something to say. So
right.
I would never talk down to it or anything.
Did you see La La Land?
No, I heard mixed things. Was it any good?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was amazing.
I like the two leads a lot.
Yeah. Well, I highly recommend you see it.
Okay.
And there's this scene in La La Land where, like, Ryan Gosling, he's a jazz pianist, and he really likes classic jazz. And John Legend has this new weird kind of
R&B kind
fusion,
of
fusion. Yeah, like I don't know what it is, but it's like jazz fused with electric stuff.
Okay.
And John Legend talks to him, and he's like, you know, you got it. You can't be like caught up on the past. You have to like reinvent things. You have to,
yeah.
Like, and I think it was really a commentary on the film because the film was like an old genre kind of film reinvented.
Okay.
Maybe, but
like updated or like updated, and then they took it to new places.
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like they updated it. I don't think they took it to new places.
Okay, that's still that's still innovation. So,
but then in the movie, Ryan Gosling's character tries to like go with this new funky weird music, and mm-hmm. he hates it.
Yeah,
and he returns to the classical jazz at the end, which is what he loves.
Yeah,
and I guess like the movie itself like didn't veer too far away from the old musicals as well. Like it had its things. I don't know where I'm going with movies. That. I guess because jazz still holds up.
Yeah, yeah. In short, how about that jazz, guys? It's pretty awesome.
In the end, I guess the point is that jazz is still relevant.
I do like watching movies and listening to music where you can tell it's from a different time, but it's earned the right to still be around. Like, I love the fact that if I'm going to watch a Woody Allen movie, there's not going to be any pop songs in it. It's all just going to be New Orleans jazz, going to have that particular font. I'm like, this is a guy who has lived through several eras of filmmaking and is still just himself, mm-hmm. and it's I want to see that. I don't want to see everything that just sort of, I like a movie or a song I can pick out of a lineup, especially if it's from a different, you know, reaching back from another age.
So there is something to be said of the classics.
Oh, absolutely.
But then how come these classic comedy albums don't hold up?
I think, well, I don't know, because first of all, comedy has a some comedy, not all. I think some it also, like, if somebody puts out a political album in the 50s, mm-hmm. just the sheer fact that the references aren't going to land is going to be a little harder.
Right.
Also, sensibilities are going to be a little different, and that's going to be hard. But I think if you're talking about stuff like, I hate to speak Voldemort's name, but Cosby albums, he's just talking about family. So a lot of that stuff still resonates because having kids is the same experience as it was back then, just now there's smartphones and stuff.
But do you feel like some people are just so hip when they do comedy?
Yes.
That they're ahead of their time, and therefore their stuff will last. Like, is that a
they're going to say people are like, I'm so hip, that like, and then it rots because they think they're too cool. Okay, your point is valid.
No, just if you're ahead of your time, then eventually, like, time moves on and your stuff is still good because you're ahead.
I think so,
but then some people are just in their time. Maybe Robert Klein was just in his time.
It could be.
And then time moved on, and then, you know.
I think there's some guys that'll hang on. Because I think that I'm okay. I'm always hesitant to do jokes on things that I don't think have a shelf life. Like, I never wrote, like, topical jokes until now, which I'm getting more into and having fun with. But I think that anything you do that's going to be dated will have a better chance of holding up if you break it down to its most relatable elements. If you're doing a bit about Facebook and it's just like, hey, isn't it weird when somebody pokes you? No one's going to know what that means when that goes out of fashion, so it's dumb. But if you talk about someone messaging you that you hate but they don't remember you, something like that, that's just a human interaction.
More universal, yeah.
Yeah, it's a human interaction as opposed to just, isn't technology dumb? It's talking about people, you know? And that's never going to go away. So until we all die and the sun explodes. So
that's partially has to do with references, what you said.
Yeah.
And also just about relating to people in all times.
Yeah, and I think the thing you bring up about Carlin is all of it was, if you boil all of Carlin down, I think it's interactions between people in power, and people in the environment, which all sort of hover around people versus something else.
External.
Yeah. People, you're the subjective interacting with the objective.
Yeah,
I feel like is a big theme of his, and that's never going to go away because that's what everyone lives every single day.
Right, and Cosby stuff as well. When you're talking about family, it's human family interaction. That stuff lasts forever.
I think like Louis C.K.'s albums are going to hold up a long time because for that same reason, and also because they're so good. You know,
it also reminds me of my talk with Phil Rosenthal. I don't remember what season that was.
I want to say 4. Maybe. 3, maybe?
I don't know. But I do remember him telling me that he wanted Raymond to be a show that could live forever, you know? And that's why everything he did was, you know, humor, family-based humor that wouldn't expire. And the references he tried to keep out. And I've tried to kind of do that with modern-day philosophers, too. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if people notice that, but I usually try to edit out, like La La Land, we're talking in the wrap-up show.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't really It's happened once or twice, but I generally don't reference movies of the time in an episode.
Yeah, you don't want to have too big a time stamp
on it. I like things to be evergreen, you know?
Yeah, I like that too. I think getting... I broad comedy kind of gets a bad rap because it's like, oh, it's mainstream. But if you look at broad in terms of like, okay, I have an idea. How can I break down as many walls to this to its, you know, being understood by the most people without losing the integrity of what I'm trying to say? I say do it. Like, if you want to really want to use a big word in a joke, unless that's what makes it super funny, I wouldn't use it because I want everyone...
Unless you're Dennis Miller.
Yeah, yeah, unless that's your thing. You need the word traverse to make it happen, which is valid.
It's a nice word.
My favorite joke of his is, you know, you hate when you're stuck behind some guy who's got to traverse the entire Gadsden Purchase with his fucking blinker on.
You actually did a pretty decent impression, I felt, as you
were... Hey, babe.
Yeah, not a bad joke.
And I love that joke because it has all those SAT words, and then the end is fucking blink. Like, it goes highbrow and then right back to low, and it's a very nice, like, pullback.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I think we should try and get him on the show.
I would do that.
I wonder.
He's super right-wing, and I'd be interested to hear what he would have to say.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be into, like, oh, this guy doesn't agree with us ideologically. Fuck him. I want to hear what those people have to say and meet them on proper terms.
I feel like
we can talk.
I'm not right or left wing. I feel like I'm very issue to issue.
Yeah, that's how people should be. But I feel like you're gonna lean one way or another for the most. But obviously, case to case is way better to go about.
Yeah.
So you're not just like dogmatic about anything.
Dan Schlissel and E.H. Carr.
That one was really interesting because I got into stand-up through comedy albums, which I feel like a lot of people don't do anymore, but CDs, but, you know, albums nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
So to hear someone whose passion is just to build those was really interesting.
Yeah.
And how he goes, like, you know, if a comedian has a long, thoughtful pause, I cut it out of the album. Because on the record, it just sounds like dude is sputtering and doesn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. But really, he's thinking, but you would have to see him and feel the room to know he's thinking. But there's a removal there where you kind of have to translate it to go, this is what he really was doing. He was just preparing for this. So I'll just give you that right away, you know? And so I've always been very interested in how comedy translates to audio more than video.
I'm always fascinated by Dan. Just, first of all, because he's such an interesting character.
Yeah.
But also because... he doesn't want to do comedy, but he's so entrenched and in love with it.
Yeah, he arguably does more for comedy than a lot of people because he's such a brilliant conduit of it, and he knows how to extract your best album out of 4 or 5 shows, which is an unbelievably hard skill to have and do well. But he's like, no, I don't want to do it. That would kind of ruin the fun if it was now like, oh, I got to be on stage now. I just want to...
He's
I want to get the best you.
You know?
He's a historian, like we were talking about.
He's right. He's in a way. He's recording and writing history in one.
Yeah, that was the whole point of that philosopher was history is shown through the prism of the guy writing it. So
that was a great pick, by the way.
Thank you.
That was, and I remember Dan really liking that pick as So
I feel like on that stuff, I feel like I got a lot of nice shout-outs this season.
And Mayim Bialik, well, we'll get to her, but she loved your pick as well.
Oh, that's great. Tom Rhodes is like, can I meet your guy that picks him? I'm like, yeah, he can meet me. I've always liked him a lot. And
you guys have been talking on Twitter, right?
A little bit, yeah. I didn't get to meet him because he had too much shit to do when he was here in October. But like, he's like, oh, you want to meet sometime and talk philosophy? Yeah, I'm down. I'm like... wow, a guy I've been watching since I was a kid is like, can I hang out with you? I'm like, yes, you can hang out with me, guy I grew up watching on TV and was inspired by. Really happy to hear.
It's a great,
great feeling.
One of those
yeah.
things in life that, you know, when you get to meet these people and they actually wind up being cool.
Oh, yeah.
Pat
I feel like,
Cooper, sorry.
I was going to say, I feel like the only people that weren't thrilled about my picks were Stanhope, because it was hard. Brownoller you guys had to call me.
Yeah. Oh,
let's
slowly get there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's back up. Was it Pat Cooper?
Okay. Pat Cooper, and Marcus Aurelius.
Mm-hmm.
Another one where I felt we didn't get too heavy into the philosophy.
Yeah.
But so many people have told me now that this was their favorite episode ever.
I love Pat Cooper because he's so angry yet he always leaves a key piece of information out of why he's angry, so it never makes sense, but he's so compellingly angry. Like, he told that story about Joan Rivers. He goes, I send 200 of the fucking things to her door. Never says what he sent. Just 200 of the fucking things.
The books.
Oh, he didn't say books on the thing.
He must have, because he gave me one of those books. I thought we said that at the top.
He didn't, not in the Jones story. I know that you said he wrote a book, but he just goes, I sent 200 of the fucking things and 200 baskets of fruit, something. And then he's like, Joan was so angry. And then my wife was like, you should be ashamed of yourself. I was like, I'm getting half the story, but I'm on for the ride anyway. Like,
it's the thing, I guess if it's not in there, the thing that he sent was a book.
Okay.
Where he had illustrated, it's called Pat Cooper Knocks Out Joan Rivers or something.
Wow.
And he gave me a copy of it. I got to show it to you.
I really want to see this now.
It's just basically like him roasting Joan Rivers on every page.
The entire book?
Making fun of her on every page, and she doesn't get a chance to come back at him. And I was like, of course she hated this.
Oh, God. That is...
And they're all like, Joan Rivers is so ugly that her blah, 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 blah.
Joan Rivers page two.
Is so stupid.
How stupid... Every other page should be, how stupid is she? Flip. She's so stupid, she can't even write her own book to fight me on
and
this.
And it's just insult after insult. And the cover is an image of him with a boxing glove knocking her in the face.
Wow. Dude hated her.
I don't know. It's just Pat, you know. That might have been his way of saying he loved her.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I mean, honestly, I felt honored that he made fun of me on that album. I'm not album, on the episode. He's like, where do you get this shit? And you're like, I got a guy. He goes, he's fucking lonely. And I was like, oh, man, I got it. I got a little.
That's me. I'm lonely.
I am very lonely. I'm like, yes. And you're like, I got to keep Alex away from getting a woman, otherwise the show would. And I'm like, yeah, make a compelling argument. So... But I legit was like, oh, that's like a little bit of comedy history, like, touched me.
Yeah.
I felt happy.
It was cool. And then going back to Tom Rhodes, who we talked about a minute ago, and Seneca the Younger.
Was a huge fan of that. I had no idea.
Yeah, that was amazing. He actually loved Seneca the Younger.
Yeah, he was like quoting Seneca to you, and I was like, oh, please don't be any of those quotes that I picked, because then it'll just be double, but they were just other stuff that he knew.
Yeah.
That was really, I was like, huh. That was a surprisingly good choice.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. And I loved his episode just because he was talking the whole thing about Seneca, and also goes back to, remember we did Epictetus with Dwayne Perkins?
Yeah.
They were in the same school of Stoicism. And he talked about how his father was killed by a drunk driver who got off scot-free. And he's like, I'm like a cool, laid-back guy, and I wanted revenge so badly, and how he worked through that was really interesting. Because you never know how you're going to feel about wanting revenge against somebody or consequences until you feel it. Because he was probably, I bet when he was younger, he'd be like, you know, if someone hurt me and we worked through it, we'd be fine. And that might be true for some things, but this was so egregious. He probably had like an identity crisis about it.
Yeah.
I might be ascribing too much meaning to it, but he seems like such a chill guy that to be like, I want to hunt down this guy and hurt him was probably like against everything in his DNA.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the kind of thing that changes a person.
I'm glad he found perspective on it, because he seems like such a nice guy. I wouldn't want him to just be tortured in his head for the rest of his life.
I think he went through a long tortured time. And,
yeah,
like, finally came out clean on the other end.
Good for him.
You know, but I think a lot of that also has to do with his wife. His wife has been amazing.
That's good too
for him.
I love how he said that Hinduism is like Marvel Comics.
Oh, yeah, I remember
bitten
that.
By a radioactive elephant, Ganesh became the eight-armed monster.
It's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Cash Peters, episode 78, and Albert Schweitzer.
He's probably listening to this, because he's... How did he contact you? Because he said that he asked to be on the show.
He did. He contacted me and then had Kelly Carlin, who's been on the show, vouch for him. And then he turned out to be a good guest. I thought he was good. But it takes me a long time always to get these out, with very few exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked about Christian Finnegan a while ago. I recorded that the same day that I went to record Robert Klein, which was a few seasons ago.
Yeah.
So these sometimes take me forever to get
out
there.
Out of the Jared, I can't remember his last name, there were references to Birdman in it. And, like, I think you'd snip some of them out and maybe referenced it at the beginning. Something where that movie came out, what, 2 years ago?
I don't know. But it takes me a long
point
time.
Point is... and it's getting longer and longer to write these, too, because I'm scraping obscurity, going like, can I get a Greek guy who said two things on a bathroom wall? I'm running out of guys.
Are you really?
I always find somebody in the end, but a lot of times it's coming close to the wire real bad.
Yeah, wow. Well, we're nearly at 100 philosophers here.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how many philosophers actually made an impact. Well, I guess we'll find out as we
Made an impact, you mean historically?
Yeah,
or?
Like, well, we're going to get to a point where it's like, was Bloomberg a philosopher, you know?
I wonder what, I would never do this, but I wonder if I could get away with just making up a guy if you would notice. Like, he was Flapacres.
There was no Wikipedia, you'd be busted. You'd have to make a Wikipedia.
What if I made a fake one? I mean, that you could... You could taint that site real good, I've heard.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to.
I guess it's doable.
And I'd be like, no, this guy's like so underground. Nobody knows him. I dug up. I saw the parchments.
Yeah.
That's how deep. I think I might have got a new discovery. Yeah.
What did you think of Cash Peters' episode?
I really liked it. He's very excitable like a child about Archie. He's like, I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah.
Butchering his accent, I'm sure.
I actually thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. I want to read some of his books now. I haven't, I want to read that Why Life Matters. I looked over his, I had no idea who he was before any of this, and I listened to the episode, and oh my God, that broke my heart about his family just wrote him off.
Yeah.
Because he was gay.
That was sad.
And the fact that he's so cheery and smiley, I was like, you went through hell to come out the other side. Like we were talking about with Tom Rhodes.
Right.
Like, you have earned every ounce of perspective you have if you go through that. You know.
Well, what I was going to tell you before, I forgot. My point was that he got upset with me about how long the episode. And then I felt
so
bad. I'm like, oh, now I'm part of it, you know? I was trying to explain to him, no, it just takes me a long time to get these out there.
Yeah.
But then when it finally came out...
Did you forget about me, Danny?
When it finally came out, he's like, oh, I think I was annoying back then. I'm a different person now. I'm like, well, it's only been like a year, you know?
I talked to him the other day. He's like, oh, yeah, I wanted to know the feedback, but I didn't want to ask you guys because I thought you'd think I was like preening for compliments.
Right.
But I really wanted to know if anyone had any constructive feedback.
But I thought people liked it. I got a few responses with people
that liked it.
And yeah, I mean, everybody's very critical of themselves. It's hard to hear yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But
especially anyone, any kind of writer or anyone trying to be funny, like, I feel like to not be super critical of yourself, that's the thing you have to fight your way through to the other side, to have just proper perspective on, like, I all the time, I'm like, I should be doing more, I should, to the point where, like, if I have a hobby, I'm like, don't have a hobby, you should be doing comedy right now, but I drive myself crazy and I don't like anything.
Have a hobby.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I'm really into revolutionary history right now, and I'm writing a pilot.
Compartmentalize your life.
Did I tell you about the pilot I'm writing?
No.
I'm writing an office comedy set in the 1700s.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I'm really excited about it.
That's a great premise.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thank you.
So what's the office do?
Okay, so a little bit of backstory. When Alexander Hamilton was 14, he worked in a trading post, and he ran it himself, basically, which is how he learned to manage treasury stuff, in the Caribbean where his mother used to work, and he ran this company with... Two guys owned it. He was the heart and soul of the company. My guys work across the street, and they're really annoyed that their business is run poorly compared to the one run by a child. So Hamilton, like, doesn't have any lines, but he's, like, in the window, and they're, like, giving him the finger, like, yay, fuck you, your parents are dead.
Yeah.
And then they have an argument over whether, because Hamilton's mother died, but his dad ran off, so they have an argument whether being effectively an orphan is the same as being an orphan, and so...
Did you see
terrible
Hamilton
people.
On Broadway?
No, because it's impossible. You have to find a guy with tickets and kill him is the only way you can get them.
Wow.
But I've been reading a lot about Founding Fathers stuff. It's my new thing.
It's funny that Hamilton's relevant again. It's Hamilton made a big comeback.
Yeah. That half the point of the show is, like, you can do all this great stuff and be forgotten, but now he's back, so, like, that show kind of affected its own ending.
Oh,
kind of.
Wow.
I think that's really cool.
That is cool. Gad Elmaleh and Roland Barthes.
This one I particularly liked because I really like... I wonder... It's such an easy thing to go, this artist meant this, and I'm judging him as a person right now, good or bad. This guy says this in his poem. That means he's a nice guy. I would like to be friends with. But Barth said, like, oh, dude, when you're writing, it's not about you. It's about the stuff that's being funneled through you that you have no control over. So yeah. That death of the author thing, it's like, if anything, it's like, pinpoint when this was done in history. Look what was around this guy and what he was like was probably a factor. But, like, him saying, this means this, there's probably some of that in it, but you can make a pretty good argument that it's actually about something else entirely that he had no idea he was even doing because he was had a blind spot to it.
It's something I now like to think about when I'm writing. I wrote a comic book. I don't know if I told you.
No, that's awesome.
We're doing stuff, Alex. Yay. We're creating stuff. I wrote a comic book.
Did you finish it, or is it just in the works?
It's I finished writing it. I have an illustrator illustrating it.
Excellent. What's it about?
It's stories from my life.
Cool.
So the first one is about why I'm making a comic book. And all
this is getting meta right away.
Yeah, and all the
you gaze into the abyss gazes also right back.
Yeah, all my failed attempts throughout the years to be a comic book
guy.
So I was writing and I'm like, oh, is this just like too narcissistic to write about myself and who cares about me?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was actually thinking about that. No, it's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about everything around you. It's about. I could be the subject of the comic, but yeah. What the comic is about life. It's about everyone. It's about things that happen to people and our times.
You're a way into a world, basically, yeah. I think is a good way to look at it.
And it's relatable. Everybody goes through some of the stuff
that I wrote about. What we were saying before about stuff, you know, aging well. What you're doing, I'm imagining, is you're talking about doing comedy and writing shows and doing podcast stuff, which most people don't do, but you're breaking them down to the elements of, this was an awkward experience I had at work. This is me being frustrated that I'm not as far, which everybody knows in their own life. So as long as you explain it properly, I think that even came up in the Gad thing when he's talking about cultural differences between comedies. Like, if you explain anything, you can overcome most cultural hurdles because in essence, they're just about interactions. You know, like that Anenu, about people singing it differently.
Yeah,
Anenu. That could be the same joke about how people get way too into Happy Birthday. It's just, you don't need to put this much stank on this song. What are you doing, dude?
Right.
It's a very human interaction.
Yeah, and that I said that to him. He's like, I don't think anybody's going to want to hear this Anenu stuff. I'm like, no, I think they'll like it.
It's about people being weird about a song, which is...
Yeah.
It happens all the time. It's just a very particular song.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that he and his friends or him or his siblings did what my brothers and I did with... Where we'd go home and make fun of all the different people singing Anenu.
The one I was surprised at, I get the one being like, Anenu, like the Aaron Neville one you're talking about.
Yeah.
But the one in the back is going, Anenu. Like, is he dying? What is. Is this a death rattle, Anenu?
I love that I put Anenu out there on the podcast.
You're going to mainstream it. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. The comic book is real slice of life stuff. You know, Good. It's like, it's everyday experiences.
Yeah.
So, I hope people like...
Everybody can relate to stuff they go through every day.
Right.
It's just got to be... I think Robin Williams said, I don't know if he was paraphrasing somebody, was like, the more specific you get, the more universal you can get. Because you go, this is what happened to me exactly. Right. And somebody goes, that happened between me and my mom or whatever. And you go, yeah. And they get it because it's so detailed that it just strikes
it.
A note with everybody in their, you know, hitting their internal notes kind of a thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like the way... Possibly Robin Williams said that.
Yeah.
All right, so now we are at Kurt Braunholer and Harry Frankfurt.
He was angry. I will give him the credit of that philosopher. I don't know if his work holds up entirely because I...
He's like a Robert Klein type philosopher.
This demon fucking argument doesn't really age well past the 70s. And it was the mid-80s, and let's admit, the 80s were weird. But his whole thing was like, you know, if you do go to do a thing and a demon would block the other choices, you're still on the hook for it because that means there are other choices. And I don't agree with that, but I did the best to explain that argument the best I could, and I was worried I didn't do a good job, but I think I did it the best I could.
Yeah,
but you guys had to call me. You're like, hey, what the fuck? And I will admit, I was drunk in a comic book store when you called me, so I
That's awesome.
Think I made enough sense, but I was like, oh, you're not happy? What's up, bro? Hey.
And that one,
sorry.
I think that one was a lost episode to us for a long time.
Yeah, you had like a hard drive error or something?
Yeah, I can't believe that we finally got that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it took maybe two and a half years.
Cash Peters was like, where's the brown oler? Mine too, but mostly.
Brown oler, where is he?
Where's your brown oler?
But I thought it was a, what I really liked about that episode was before we got to the philosophers, I thought it was really funny. It was going pretty well.
I liked that episode, even though he didn't love the philosophy because he was just entertaining.
Yeah.
And I love that one of my coworkers knew him, so I got to drop that super specific cornbread.
Yeah, that was great.
And you're like, I told you, my guy's thorough. He just does his research.
You know what was really interesting about that episode to me is that he talked about his struggles for success, and by the time it came out, he was successful.
What is he doing now? He had that show Bunk for a while.
He had a comedy special recently.
That's good.
He had a big tour.
He had an album, I believe, right?
Yeah, he's had like so much success since we talked about this.
He said something really interesting. He goes, I think fame is only worth anything in that it allows you to make things.
Yeah.
So.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay. Sure. Okay, I guess we should.
Okay, now there are other tables open. I don't mind her being here. I'm just a little confused.
This is interesting.
Okay, let's see where this goes.
Hi.
Okay.
Okay, what's your name?
Ting Ting Ling.
I should just point out that
we have a visitor.
And you had a different table and you wanted to join us here. Why?
I heard Roland Barthes.
And
then I needed to join. I felt like I belonged here.
Okay.
All right. Well, welcome. Good to have you. We're talking about our podcast, which maybe you'll like. Okay. It's called Modern Day Philosophers. It's comedians discussing philosophers.
Have you really?
I definitely listened to it, yes.
Did you?
Because I basically just Googled like best philosophy podcasts.
We're number
one. And then
one.
I also just take recommendations from people I work with. So
cool. Did you study philosophy in school or is it just a hobby?
Okay. Just a hobby.
Cool.
Also because it's life.
Yeah.
You know, people who've already articulated the thoughts that you have, but in a much more in-depth intellectual way. So it's nice.
So, yeah, what I liked about Kurt Braunohler going back is just like the perspective of him talking about the struggle and how hard it was to make it. And then by the time it aired, I was like wondering if, you know, he'd even had time to listen to it at that point because he was so busy.
It's like maybe that's a secret to success. You have to complain that you're a failure on this podcast and then it all turns around.
Do you remember what was hard about Harry Frankfurt?
I told you it was that the alternate choices kind of thing. Determinism versus free will. And he had come up with that argument about if you see two options and you pick one and a demon had blocked the other one, that means that, like, even though you couldn't have done any otherwise, you still made the choice, so there's alternate possibility. I don't think it's a very good metaphor.
We didn't like the fact that he had to use a demon to describe his philosophy.
And then the other analogy you had found was if you're going to vote Republican, but then somebody puts something in your head that makes you vote Democrat, but then you vote Democrat anyway, something, and you're like, who's this guy putting shit in people's heads?
Yeah, what's the...
This is...
Who's putting it in your...
Does this guy want to be like a sci-fi writer?
And takes all the onus off the person for coming up with their own ideas and thoughts.
Yeah.
It's like,
then you go back to Barthes, and then where the idea is coming from around you. You're a causal nexus, things flowing through you, so...
Right, but you have to be able to filter properly.
Yeah, but you could make a... I've always believed that there's so many things that filter into you that free will is kind of a dubious thing to believe in. I want it to be real, but I really don't know.
But if you have a strong enough core, you don't think, like...
I feel like how we feel about free will doesn't matter as much as the logic of it, because I could feel like a lot of things are true that might not be. This could all be an illusion. Have you watched Westworld?
No.
Okay. All the robots on that show don't know they're robots, and they're so sure that their stories are human interactions based on what they want. Those are all programmed, and they're all fake memories. Not that that's what we have, but I feel like that's making a good point about if I feel like I have free will, I'm a finite person who is inherently flawed just by my creation, with so much other shit funneling into just make me. So if me saying, yeah, but I can do stuff, I'm hesitant to say that I have much choice in the matter. I feel like I'm more of a conduit, death of the author.
But that takes all the blame off you for your decision making.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like a cop-out to me. Still.
I don't think it's a cop. I think that it sucks when we do bad, but I also feel like if you break down a bad person far enough, you can usually see some shit that happens to them that it makes it not their fault. It's, yeah. We still need to stop those people.
I even think most bad people are coming from a good place. I think sometimes they just have a skewed idea of what's good.
Yeah.
And I think everybody has the desire to be good. I don't think anyone has the desire to be bad.
Yeah.
Just bad people have such a skewed idea of what's good that their desire to be good is pushing them to be bad.
I just feel like if we combed over the childhood of Donald Trump enough, we'd see some shit where like, oh, that was real fucked up and could break a person. And then that perpetuates this awful cycle.
It would create
cycle.
Empathy for you towards him?
Yeah. I mean, we still need to stop him, but like I would understand where... We just don't get to see the beginning of the movie. We've seen the awful orange climax.
So everybody's just a victim of circumstance.
I think so, yeah. I know that that sounds like a cop-out, but I think logically,
I think
if you break
Billy
it down...
Billy Joel lyric, actually.
What?
I think it's actually a Billy Joel lyric.
You know, sometimes Billy Joel drops some philosophy. I can't...
Yeah.
Maybe we're all in a New York state of mind. I don't
victim
know.
Victim of circumstance.
Who did start the fire? I'm not sure.
I don't know. It was probably part of a riot.
It's probably the Chicago shirtwaist fire.
Alu Bell and Thomas Zazz.
Thomas Zazz.
Zazz.
I like that one because Mr. Zazz is a Batman villain. Just happens to have the same name. That was a pretty good one. That was all about mental illness. Yes?
I thought that was the most interesting philosophy of all of them. And
yeah.
The fact that Al and I both were like reluctant to go along with it at the beginning and mm-hmm. then... ultimately came around to it.
Yeah.
Where we're like, oh, maybe there is no such thing as mental illness. Like, because how do you define mental health?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely some leeway because if you're saying I know for sure what mental health looks like, it does paint this by the numbers view of reality where a lot of different viewpoints, you could just go mentally ill. However, I feel like that philosopher... He's like, you know, there's no such thing as mental illness because there isn't always a valve in your brain that's broken that makes you have schizophrenia. It's just the inability to go along with norms. I feel like that's real victim blaming for people who can't. Like, uh-huh. just because it doesn't show up on it. Like he was saying, serotonin levels are really hard to track on tests. You just have to look for other things that are affecting them, you know, in mood-wise and stuff, and then go, maybe it's that, and then you apply medicine, stuff like that. If you're going to go, yeah, well, it's not mental illness because I can't see on a brain chart where that's broken, that just means the chart isn't good enough to see it. It's still something structurally wrong, but the definition of structure is what needs to change. So
yeah.
I'm not thrilled with that philosopher, but I do like the idea that we've come up with that can salvage out of it, like mental health and mental illness are in the eye of the beholder, where a lot of things you might go mentally ill, mentally healthy, are just your own standards of what you think it is, and you need to challenge that once in a while.
Right.
I'm on board with that.
By the way, I think that was the most interesting episode for me.
Cool.
It was eye-opening, first of all, that for 17 years or something, he's been mad at me and never told me.
Oh, because you were like, hey, you suck, and he's like, what now?
I can't believe I ever said that to him. And I was like 16 or 15 years old at mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah,
and he's held on to it for so many years without telling me, and he's had so many opportunities to tell
me. Yeah,
the fact that he finally told me that and that we had that conversation was incredibly interesting. He's also one of my favorite comedians ever. And
yeah.
Probably nostalgia wise.
That's
too,
a thing I wanted to bring up. You defended him on that cringe humor thing before I ever met you. I read that because I used to keep up with that website.
Yeah.
And I read their whole. It was the Hacks List was that he was on with some other people, and I had never seen any of these people. And I'm in college, so I'm like, yeah, they sound like hacks. And then I saw some. I'm like, I thought that guy was pretty funny. Maybe whoever wrote this was angry and you know, blindsided. Whatever. And then you wrote that thing where you're like. Come on, man. You guys are being a little harsh on a guy who's just working like all you are.
Yeah. So. I remember I wrote this whole defense. They're like, we won't take him off our list, but we'll publish your defense alongside it. And
that was one of my first times I ever knew who you were. I think I'd seen you around a little bit, and I was like, oh, it's that guy I saw at State of New York one time. Let's see what he has to say.
It's so interesting. I also want to read you something. We have a listener who's a Buddhist monk in Okinawa, Japan.
Cool.
And he wrote to me about that episode, and he wrote, hey, man, I don't think Asperger's is a mental illness. So I wrote, what is it then? And he wrote, a developmental disorder. And then he wrote, I hope my remark didn't offend you. I said, of course not. And then he goes, cool, I guess the delay in response time made me a little paranoid. It took me a while to get back to him.
The thing I've learned from this recap is you take a long time to do stuff and it makes people think you hate them. You're like, no, I love you. I'm just lazy.
I have to work on it. He wrote, by the way, I have Asperger's, so if you'd like to know more about it, let me know. I said, sure, I'm very interested. He said, I like to explain it as being the smartest person in the room, but not knowing what
to say. Is this thrilling
to
our listener, by the way?
How do you feel?
There are points that I thought of, but I don't know if I'm allowed to, like,
if you haven't noticed,
my hand for a moment, but maybe not. It's also about
sure. Go ahead.
Oh, but we're talking about Asperger's now. So I do want to hear what.
All right. I guess it's good. Right. She's hooked. She's not tuning into another podcast yet.
Okay. So the guy said he had Asperger's.
All right. He says, I like to explain it as being the smartest person in the room, but not knowing what to say. And I said, that sounds like a pitch for a book if I've ever heard one.
You know who is a very famous person with Asperger's? David Byrne from the Talking Heads.
Oh.
So you can have a developmental disorder and you can do amazing things.
So I told him that sounds like a pitch for a book. He said, never thought of it like that. He said, the thing is with Asperger's, you could learn the skills other people are born with, and to some degree, you can overcome the awkwardness, which is maybe what I was saying. It might just be awkwardness that they think he's a jerk. He said, reading Paul Ekman's books helps me to learn to read facial expressions and social cues. I couldn't even look at people in the eye until I was a teenager. Now I'm pretty good at reading people, well, except for text, I guess. But now I spend way less time second-guessing myself when interacting with people. Performing on stage would have been unthinkable to me when I was younger, and now I do it all the time. Aspies, which I like that abbreviation. Hey, it
sounds like an award.
Yeah.
And the Aspie for best developmental disorder goes to a Buddhist monk in Japan who didn't know that he should show up to this.
He says, Aspies are more susceptible to mental illness like depression, though, due to feelings of unconnectedness to others.
Yeah. So. It's got to be a hard life.
Yeah. Being a monk in Japan? Or
that too.
I wonder if that fed into his desire to be a monk.
Yeah. I wonder, because it sounds like, I mean, I've never had autism, obviously, but I wonder if that drew him into an isolation where then he figured out a way to deal with it.
Yeah.
And through solid, speaking from dumb white guy perspective, I'm like, don't Buddhist monks, they're awful in their own head. That's kind of their thing. I don't know. But it seems like he threw it back out in a positive way.
Oh, I had a good idea for a joke. I have this, you know, my little dog, the Boston Terrier.
Yeah.
I try to bring him in stores around LA a lot, but you know, if you don't have a service dog, they won't let you bring him in.
Uh huh.
But I feel like he is like a kid to me. You know, that's how dog owners feel. So I get a little angry when people can bring their kids in, but I can't bring in my dog.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, it'd be funny if I just stone face, just like I go in holding him. And they'll stop me as they do and say, sorry, you can't bring in your dog. And I go, I'm sorry, this is not a dog. It's my kid. And then they would say, no, that's clearly a dog. And I'd say, this is a kid and he's on the spectrum. Because, you know, if you say that, what are they?
Yeah. Like,
you know, excuse me, he's a kid and he's on the spectrum. He's on the dog to human spectrum.
Yes. You didn't have to. You didn't say which spectrum.
I didn't say which spectrum, but if they're smart, they'll figure it out. It's the spectrum that spans from dog to human. I'm not saying where he is on the spectrum.
He's pretty close to one side.
He's leaning,
if we're honest,
very heavily towards dog.
Oh.
I got a laugh from our listeners, so I feel good about
that. Yay.
Thrilled she is.
She's so sarcastic. I love it. Okay, here we go. Mayim Bialik and Karl Popper.
Yes.
So what did you think of that one?
I thought it was... I liked in the beginning when she was talking about how she reconciled faith and science, where she's like... Because I think you were saying to her, like, you know all this stuff about chemicals in the brain. That's what you do. You're a neuroscientist. How do you reconcile that with your religion? And she's like, well, I feel like I'm going as far as I can into knowledge, which if I think there's a beneficent God he would want me to do, and also I understand that there is a certain point where this gets cut off and I can go, then it's up to your interpretation of where it came from. I don't know if I agree with that, but it's a really interesting viewpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were there any other things that stuck out to you from the episode, or?
I was just happy to have Blossom on the show. Really,
It was the crazy thing with that episode is that, I explained it in the episode, but I did not hit record. The first time I interviewed her,
mm-hmm.
and halfway through I'm like, oh, I don't know if I looked at it. And I'm like, I don't know if the recording stopped or if I never hit record. I don't know what to do. And she's like, well, just hit record now and let's continue on. And I did. And then she's like, well, if we didn't record the first thing, we'll redo it, which was really nice of her.
Okay.
I'd never done that in 83 episodes or 82 episodes, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then a few months later, we re-recorded at the Big Bang Theory in her dressing room.
Cool.
So it was pretty interesting.
Was that set just so quirky?
It was cool. I mean, you know, beforehand, and the episode hasn't been published yet at the time that we're talking about mm-hmm. it right now. But the listeners will know what we're talking about once they hear this. I recorded the laughter of the table read from when I was sitting there waiting for her in her dressing room. And it really felt like I was, at an actual laugh factory, you know?
Yeah, so just, like, that's where they make it.
Laughs. It's like, okay, they're producing laughs for distribution, for mainstream mm-hmm. television distribution.
Those are network-approved laughs.
Yeah, these are mass-produced corporate laughs.
Yeah,
but
they're all tight and ready for consumption.
They're laughing. They're making laughs for the whole country, and it's kind of cool to be there for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, being at a laugh mill.
Yeah.
They're just turning the
mill. Jokes are the grist, and you just...
And it's very interesting to see jokes and...
Yeah, if you don't know at home, comedy is windmill-powered. It's actually a very elaborate process.
Just jokes for mass distribution. Yeah. It was so interesting to sit there and like, hear those laughs being tested. It's like, okay... It's like testing, like, you know, any kind of product. Where it's like, before we put this on the menu...
Yeah.
Let's test it all and make sure it works.
And it's interesting that you came out of there excited about it, because I could equally see somebody going in and being bummed out, like, oh, that's how the sausage is made?
No, I love it. I love watching
things. Upton Sinclair.
Being made. I love, like, the process behind the scenes of...
Yeah.
Like, any time I get to see how something is made, I think it's so cool, you know? I love watching the behind the scenes of any business.
I bet if we went to how they make McDonald's hamburgers, we'd both leave very sad, though.
We'd probably leave nauseated, but I feel like I'd still be excited to watch.
And then we'd look at each other and go, you want to get some McNuggets? Yeah. Let's forget about that.
I wouldn't, but I know that's for other reasons. I don't
eat. Oh, that's right, yeah.
I'll only eat if they had a kosher McNugget. I'd
okay.
Eat
so,
but
challenge accepted, McDonald's.
The McKosher McNugget.
They're shaped like little stars.
And then the last two episodes that have not aired yet at the time of this recording are Ryan Connor, who
he's
I know
my
you're
buddy.
good friends with.
Very good friends with Ryan Connor. He used to give me, he's in L.A. now, but he used to give me stage time and stuff. And last time I went to L.A. to visit you and my friends, I got to see him for a little bit. He's writing for a show now, and he's really married, and he's happy.
Yeah, he's a terrific guy.
I love that guy.
And we talked a lot about Mozart, and we ended the whole episode with Mozart. And then Bobcat Goldthwait was our...
Who was a hero of mine. I love that guy.
Final episode. And I guess I shouldn't ruin it for you, but...
Well, me and my dad have always bonded over the fact that we think Bobcat's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I also love his movies. God Bless America is like Tarantino-level awesome. And I haven't seen his new one, but I met him for a second when he was shooting it in Brooklyn.
I love the philosopher that you picked out for him. Who is George Louis Borges? Borges? Am I saying it right? Or Borges?
I don't know. This was also, I believe, the season I started including pronunciations.
Jorge Luis Borges.
Okay. And it was about hell, right?
Yeah. You said what they had in common was that he lit the Tonight Show on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So you picked a philosopher who talked about hell.
Okay. And I believe he also grew up Catholic, I want to say?
Yeah.
So that would feed into that as well.
Yeah, it was a great fit.
Awesome.
It was really an interesting talk. And
Does he do stand-up gigs anymore, or is he just filmmaker now?
He does. He does stand-up shows. And you know my show Bookshelf at the Improv?
Yeah. Oh, he did that, right.
He did it. And he also has his own show that comes right after my show.
Nice.
Called Crab Apples.
Okay.
So people should check that out.
I mean, I knew him originally as
the voice in cartoons that I always recognized. And I was like, oh, it's that guy again. And my dad was like, oh, let's sit down and watch some of what he used to do on The Tonight Show, where it looked like he was on too much acid and screaming.
We had such an interesting talk about that. Like how that guy was just like him lashing out.
Mm-hmm.
And like he was really a shy guy inside, and he put on this whole other thing because like he was just like trying to be something.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you make it sound like it was this artifice, and I'm sure to a point it was, but he was so good at it, I'm sure that some of his sense of humor is that guy. But after a while, he was like, I don't want to do that anymore. And I've watched clips of him since. He's still really funny, and he just talks in his normal voice.
But it was all just a rebellion. It was all just him finding himself.
Mm-hmm. Because also, he got famous relatively young. Did you ever see the movie when stand-up stood out with the Boston scene? They all like hated him because he was 14 and he was going to be on The Tonight Show or something. And they all had this weird grudge against him because they were all, you know, 35 and drunk and miserable, and he was doing well.
Yeah.
But I think he, you know, out of that scene, a lot of those guys were really funny. I think he was one of the funniest out of them. So I'm like, yeah, he rose because he was really good.
But it was interesting that I really didn't know much about him, and the more I researched him leading up to the interview, the more I realized that nobody knew anything about who he really was.
Oh, wow.
Like, and I wanted to get into to really tap into the soul of the man when I talked to him. And I feel like I did a little bit. And I talked to him. I'm like, you're really heavily guarded. Like, I'm like, you don't want anyone to know who you are. And he was like, yeah, that's true. He's like, he's like, you know, you picked up on that.
My goal was that I wanted, my dad was like, can you tell him that I'm a fan? And so I told you to do it. I haven't heard it, so I don't know if you actually did it, but I hope you did.
I don't remember. I think I told him that you were a fan.
Okay, that's good enough.
I don't know if I told him your dad was.
I told my dad that you did that, so he's happy anyway.
Awesome.
let's leave him that.
cool. Well, thank you for working with me on another great season.
Thank you.
I feel like we should shake hands now, but...
No, it's be very businesslike of us. But we're not professionals, so why should we start now? Hot.
And we have our listener here. Did you want to... You had some things you wanted to say?
They're just regarding free will. I mean, you mentioned that... Like, you could blame circumstances for any situation or just any person, but... I mean, I guess, like, also to reach a level of self-awareness, you need certain opportunities or circumstances or certain people, perhaps. But then it's like, I think at a certain point in your life, you could accept that, yes, you are all these things because of your circumstances, but then also you could just work around that or work from there.
Yeah, but I feel like even if you're self-aware, you're still a cog in that machine.
Right.
So there's a certain point where you just can't understand, even if you're super self-aware and doing the best you can, I feel like other shit's still working through you, just mathematically.
Right.
But I get what you mean. Like if I'm wrong, which I hope I am, then being a good person and being like, okay, here are my circumstances, let me rise above them, would be the proper thing to do. So I don't think you're wrong. I just, mathematically, I think it works differently.
Right. No, I'm not trying to get you to tell me that I'm right. But then, you know.
Okay, well, I don't think you're really right, but I also think you're
the only reason I disagree with you is that you're wrong.
Okay, well, right back at you.
All right. Well, from the Washington Square Diner.
This has been.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in again for another great season. Looking forward to season 8. A lot of surprises around the corner for us, because I don't think we even know about them.
No.
Hopefully. I guess life is always a surprise.
That's true.
But thank you for supporting the show. Please continue to support the show. Please tell people about the show. And check out Alex's work online, The Racist Toaster.
My Racist Toaster. I just pitched it to Adult Swim, so fingers crossed.
All right. I hope you get picked up.
I hope so, too.
And my comic book. Go pick up a copy. I'm guessing it'll be out by the time this airs. So
give me. I want a copy. I want to read
Fair Enough.
Fair Enough. I want to read Fair Enough.
All right. Cool. I got one sale.
Yes.
I think I
Wait, you got to sell it to me? I thought I could get one for free.
I was going to say.
You got one. You got one in Lynn.
I'll buy one.
He got one sale.
I got one sale. All right, cool. Thanks again. Thanks, right. Alex.
Thanks, everybody.
And thanks again to Logan Heftel.
Yes.
Who's behind the scenes working on this podcast all the time. And we couldn't do it without him either. So shout out to Logan. He's been with us since episode 1, too.
Yep.
Okay. Bye. Hey, everybody, just a quick follow-up to the plug there at the end. My comic book, Fair Enough, is not yet finished and available, though it has come a long way since then, and it's looking really good. And when it does come out, I will definitely let you know. But in the meantime, still in the works. Also, I haven't forgotten about that Patrice O'Neill clip of Patrice and I talking about Al Lubell, which I promised to post, and I will post that up hopefully soon, maybe later this week. Okay, that's it for now.